Hey, Pronouncers, welcome back. Exciting episode coming up. The co-founder and CEO of Sticker Mule is with us today. Super excited about that. Anthony Constantino. He started Sticker Mule about 13 years ago. I'm sure everybody's heard of Sticker Mule here and or uses it regularly. And he just dives into this, the story of it, the ups and the downs and everything in between. Very, very exciting episode, especially to have him on. But real quick, we've got four awesome sponsors. You guys know the names. Hopefully you picked the first one correctly. Here we go. Easy Way. You know that you shouldn't be spending all day cleaning dirty screens. Easy Way's line of environmentally conscious chemicals will get the job done faster, more efficiently, and cost you a fraction of the cost per screen. 701 and 842 are Campus Inc.'s favorite Easy Way chemicals to clean and reclaim. If you value a company with how-tos, with best practices and questions to help you, Easy Way is the best company to use for that. We appreciate you guys. Thank you. Multicraft. All right. Open up your phone, pull up Instagram, and send a DM to multicraft_daddy. Multicraft_daddy is giving out free cases of PMI tape. So send him a DM, tell him how much you love the podcast. If you do, thank you. And Dave will get your info and send you a case of PMI tape. If you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years have been providing you a top brand at competitive pricing. We thank you, Multicraft, for being able to work with us. Supacolor. Supacolor is the world's best heat transfer. It's made by screen printers for screen printers. And we actually spent some awesome time there out in California. They have a facility in Los Angeles area. These guys are so great to be able to get to know. And their support team, though, is incredible. If you ever have issues or in a pickle, you can absolutely be able to reach out. And they really, really do. And just go over the top to make things right. Shipping you things overnight, whatever needs to get done, they are there. They're a ride or die, which is amazing. They understand the pressures and expectations of running a shop. And so that's why they pride themselves on being super fast and super easy. Use Printavo 15, that's Printavo 15. You get 15% off your order. And then last but not least, GraphX Source. If you need a solution to help improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphX Source offers industry-leading outsourcing options to be a part of your team. This works so well with different people using Printavo to help with production art, with order entry, mock-ups, creative work, digitizing, even some customer service. They are there. They have over 30 years being in the game and really know how to work inside of your shop to be able to help you there. Use Printavo Pod for 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitizing order. Let's jump into the episode. Thanks, guys.
Anthony, appreciate you joining us. I had to look back to my first email reaching out to Sticker Mule. November 2021. And there's been a couple of emails since then. I won't say the number, but
Anthony, Bruce is a Sticker Mule diehard fan.
That's awesome.
And we are diehard customers, but Bruce has always obsessed over Sticker Mule. So that's why he's stalking you.
Even the hot sauce.
The hot sauce.
It's been added to the cart. I can't eat hot sauce, but it's been added to the cart because I thought it was cool. a little bit of background, like we're in the screen printing industry, kind of neighboring to the labels side that you're in, although I know you've dove into, t-shirt side as well. So, Steven runs a larger shop and a bigger program out of Illinois as well. And, as Steven mentioned, like, it's fascinating, I think, seeing Sticker Mule as to what you've built and how it changes what you thought was the norm. The way that the process of ordering is done, approvals, the speed, the customer service. I think we like to try to pluck
these unique objects out of space and like figure out their story and, you know, send screenshots and everything. So
for some reason, our purchasing team, my phone number is on the account and I like never took it off. So I still get every proof to my phone. And Bruce was like, how much do you Sticker Mule? And so I just like recorded my screen and just started scrolling.
Yeah.
And I went to like 2020. I mean, it went back, Bruce. It was like a really long, we should post it on here when we post the video. I haven't logged in years. Like we use it. I mean, it's like a big part of our business, but awesome. I think what's interesting is as screen printers, we like selling, you know, a $3 shirt for $8, and stickers are kind of an afterthought for us, or yeah, we'll get them for the customers, but you guys obsess over it. Which I think is just like super fascinating. Can you go into a little bit of your backstory on Sticker Mule, just so you know shops listening kind of can get up to speed?
And actually, even Anthony, before Sticker Mule, I'm kind of curious about too, because you've mentioned that you were in manufacturing before, but I didn't see much about that.
Yeah, I was. Well, it's a long story, so that would be two podcasts. But you know, the short story is, you know, I was born into the world of manufacturing. My father started a manufacturing company. He died when I was 8. By the time I graduated college, we were in like, you know, a bankruptcy situation. The company had become, you know, 10 years of his absence, the company had become completely dysfunctional. So I went through X number of years of trying to save, you know, a dysfunctional family company from bankruptcy. And then down the road, ended up starting Sticker Mule. Ran both for a period of time. And then, the one acquired the other. Well, Sticker Mule acquired the other to get the floor space and all that.
What type of manufacturing was it?
We did packaging. So yeah, we did retail packaging. Yeah, we did packaging and envelopes. We did packaging. I don't even remember. It was so long ago. We did envelopes too. We made photo packaging, photo envelopes. When people used to get their photos developed, we were one of the people making the envelopes. So partly, you know, the economy, the changes in the world decimated us. You know, digital cameras killed the photo packaging business. But, you know, also it was very dysfunctional. You know, when things change, you got to change. And it was very dysfunctional. So I did that for a period of time, spent a few years of my life meeting with bankers every 3 to 6 months and, you know, begging them not to force us into bankruptcy because we were out of compliance. We had outstanding loans and we were out of compliance with the terms of our loans. And eventually got out of that situation, stabilized the company financially, and then started Sticker Mule.
Wait, how old were you then?
I started doing that when I was like 19. I was still in college.
How big of an impact did those years play on what you do today?
I got to see up close and personal things I don't want to see happening in a company. So, when we started building Sticker Mule, we designed it to designed to be a great place to work, a great place to shop. We wanted to make it, you know, a place where I would enjoy working and other people would enjoy working. And that means like not having dysfunction. And somebody said to me once we were 5 years into Sticker Mule our CFO said to me, she said, well, what's our strategy? We don't seem to have one. I said, we have a simple strategy. It's called we try to get better every day. And in a lot of companies, you see a lot of stagnation. And like, that's what I saw. I saw a company, you know, I was in a company before that was failing and people were stagnant, resistant to change. They just wanted the next day to be better for no apparent reason. It was just going to be better. And, Sticker Mule is a company that's always moving forward. So I said, you know, our strategy is we get better every day. And I said, look at everyone at Sticker Mule, all the salaried people. If you look at anyone salaried and non-factoried, and even the factory, I said, but definitely all the salaried, they all come to work every day thinking about or doing something tangible to make the company better, you know, almost every single day. And when you work that way, you know, things just naturally get better. But yeah, it was, that's a big impression. I mean, I never wanted to go through bankruptcy again. I never wanted to be beholden to banks. So Sticker Mule has no investors and, we have a bank, but we're not beholden to any banks. We took out a loan during COVID just because we were, this is actually interesting. We took out a loan during COVID just because, you know, why not? That was the only time we ever took a loan where we were able to easily service it. We didn't know what was going to happen. And then the whole COVID thing happened and our lawyers came to me and we addition to getting a loan, we qualified for one of these. We took out a loan before the PPE program. I was on the plane to talk about this. It was like a Paycheck Protection Program.
Yeah. No, this is great.
We took out a loan before the Paycheck Protection Program. We didn't even know that was going to happen. And then that came into existence, and our lawyers and our accountants were like, you know, we could qualify for quite a lot of money through the Paycheck Protection Program. And we refused it. We ended up not taking it. I wouldn't take the Paycheck Protection Program money. We qualified for a few million dollars. And I just said, you know, I don't like being beholden to other people. I was like, nothing comes for free. There's going to be strings attached. And there ended up being strings attached in a way, because all the companies that did take a lot of money, they all got like, some of them got shamed, you know, on the internet for taking money when they didn't need it, and so on and so forth. And we needed it in a sense, because we were 100% shut down. So we went from having, because we were in New York State, which got completely shut down. So we went from having our best, you know, we had a massive record month. The month before COVID. So we were like, it was incredible. And then all of a sudden we had zero sales for a month. We got completely shut down. We couldn't take any orders. All of our customers were leaving and going to our competitors who were allowed to stay open. And so we had to cover the cost of all of the entire company with no income. Luckily we were only shut down for about a month. So we did deserve the money, but you know, whatever, we didn't take it. We took a loan instead. That's the only
one. Wow. Holy cow. That's okay. Can you backtrack a little bit and talk about like the inception of Sticker Mule? Like, when did it really start to take off? You know, because I mean, you started in what, 2010 or something?
Yeah,
we started
in 2010.
Like, when was like a hobby to like, oh, this is legit, to like, oh, this is bigger than, you know, bigger than anything now? Like, when was that? Yeah, if you could walk us through.
I say it took off immediately the first day, because we opened and we got like about 20 orders the first day. And, you know, I said I had been in a company that was failing and struggling to get orders and couldn't figure out a way to get orders. And I was like, well, 20 orders in a day, I'd never seen that.
Where'd they come from? Do you remember?
What happened was we designed, you know, at the time, CR Designer designed Sticker Mule. It looks roughly like it looks today. And so if you go back 12 years, it's like that looks like ours, was pretty impressive. He had never designed a website before. Also, it was his first time ever designing a website, but you know, he designed Sticker Mule. He did it in about 2 weeks, and it looks roughly like what it looks like today. So at the time it was popular on the internet to within the design community to talk about interesting new design concepts, because the web was just starting to become beautiful in around 2010. Prior, it was like the web 2.0 movement. Like, the web was starting to become, people were realizing like websites didn't just need to be, you know, exist, they could also look attractive and stylish, and it was getting easier to make things attractive and stylish. So the design community just started talking about us. We got on a bunch of blogs, cool new designs of the weeks, and so on and so forth. And because of that, we started instantly getting orders.
Wow. You're speaking Bruce's language. Bruce is a designer.
Big previous designer, turned coder and stuff. But.
Bruce, our students stalk your blog from back in your day where you did a redesign for PayPal as a case study.
Yeah,
it's really
that was
good.
That was an interview for Google, and then I didn't get a job, so I used it as a portfolio.
But you built Printavo, so we're grateful for you. But you grew this like paid ads organically. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So no, we didn't do ads until about year three, and only because a customer contacted us and they said, you know, you could make a lot of money running ads. And I said, no, it's okay. We don't do advertising. And he was like, well, I run advertising for a very large e-commerce company. And he said, I'm so convinced you'd be successful with this, I'll do it for free. And you have to pay for the ads, but I'll run your ad campaigns for free. And I was like, well, all right, whatever. And so we started and we had success. And then, you know, he said to me, look, I kind of want to get out of this job and start a consultancy. Would you go on contract with us? So that was the beginning of us, you know, running ads. Was year three, customer intervening and getting us into that world. I'd say now we're probably one of the, you know, we probably outbuy everyone in terms of ads in our space, mainly because our conversion is very high. So I tell people, like, as your conversion gets higher, your ad return gets better. You know, I didn't know anything about this in the beginning, but right. So as your conversion gets higher, your return on ad spend gets better. So you can run more ads than other people would. So If you look at our ad spend, it's pretty substantial. And
can you share what you guys spend now?
No, I don't. It's a substantial number. The best thing people could do, they want to get a sense of what we do, is like, you know, there's a cool tool called SimilarWeb that I use a lot. I don't know if you guys use SimilarWeb, but SimilarWeb gives you some amount of data on all sorts of companies, and I use that to look at people all the time. But
it's in the millions, right? Like,
yeah, it's not 100,000.
But that's interesting. Like you didn't know much about ads. You know, like, okay, let's do it. And then you found something and you just kept iterating on it. Do you think that is what fueled, like, you knew you had a beautiful product, awesome customer experience, and you just put more gas on it? Do you feel like that is what really fueled like the exponential growth of the company?
You know, I didn't know anything when we started. I was like a hobbyist designer, although I couldn't design from a perspective of actually drawing anything or using a design tool. I understood usability principles as a hobby. I enjoyed that. I didn't know marketing at all. You know, now that I'm into marketing, I tell everyone, like, it's pretty simple. I tell everyone, like, once we were like 3 or 4 years or five, I don't know, at some point we were in the sticker mill. I said, how do we figure out how to continue growing, or like, what's determining our growth? And yeah, like, figures, it's pretty simple. It's just how much traffic do you get every day? And then how effective are you? What's your conversion rate on that traffic? How effectively do you convert that traffic into customers? And then what do they spend on average? So if you want to grow revenue, you're either going to grow traffic, you're going to improve your conversion rate, or you're going to increase your average spend per customer, average order size. And I said, like, early on, even to this day, I said, you know, convincing people to spend more money is not so easy. So like in the beginning, we worked a lot on conversion rate. And then eventually there's diminishing returns on conversion rate. Like, you can't have a 50% conversion rate. It can only get so high. You know, we're still working on conversion rate. But at a certain point, you know, your focus just becomes on growing traffic. So then you start to think, well, how can I grow traffic? Advertising. You know, there's only a few ways to do it. Google, organic, advertising, email, social, which I'm like less of a fan of. And, you know, whatever other channels, you know, people use different channels like TV ads and stuff like that to get brand awareness and billboards and stuff like that. But, you know, we just realized the main way we get traffic is Google, paid Google, organic, email. And actually, that's just about it for us.
Wow. Just for shops listening to this, conversion is like once they're on their website, when they've started the checkout process, actually getting them to buy, right? And so that... Can we talk about that for a second? Because like the sticker ordering process, right? Like there's like ASI companies and promo companies, and like it's so difficult to like order stickers. With Sticker Mule, you can order a sticker. You can order, you know, whatever type of stickers you want within seconds. Can you tell us about that? Because I think this is a custom. It could be a die cut sticker. Could be any type of sticker. And you're doing a completely custom process all online.
Yep.
I don't know, Bruce, that's the part that like, I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah.
All right, real quick, I got to tell you something. This is really interesting, and here's why. We formed a company called Inktava. You may have heard of it, but it has three different brands right now: Printavo, Inksoft, and Graphics. So we're all sister companies now, a big happy family. What we're able to do is Printavo is managing your shop management and workflow organization. Inksoft can run your website and handle online stores at scale. So running multiple different stores for fundraisers, schools, company stores, and everything in between. And Graphics Flow is a brand new product to be able to help reduce all the back and forth with art. So it has a huge art library that you can put on your website so customers can see and pluck what they want. Plus, you can also be able to collect different ideas and send them to customers to approve as well. Really, really cool. Plus, in-app editing. It's like Canva, but specifically for shops. All right, check it out. All those brands are on Inktavo.com. That's Inktavo.com. All right, thanks.
So as we got going, you know, people started saying to us, you know, we were growing pretty good, and people started saying, you don't have to be killing your competitors. And I said, no, the funny thing is a number of our competitors, they would publish their numbers on their blog. You know, we don't give our numbers up, but they would give their numbers up. And I'd say, no, like, we're not killing, they're actually growing. All of our competitors were growing along with us. And I think, you know, the reason why is we surveyed our customers a few times and we found out that 50% of people that buy from us had never bought stickers before. So what we realized, you know, when you make something easy to buy, you mentioned, like, you know, some sites is very, sometimes very difficult to buy stickers. But when you make it very easy, when it's difficult, people are going to buy stickers for their brand, for their company, things that they really need. When it's easy, they're going to buy stickers of their cat. You know, they're going to buy stickers of their dog, pictures of their friend's face. You know, somebody said the other, whatever, pictures of their friend's face to put in, you know, bathroom stalls and stuff like that. You know, I don't know. But yeah, all of a sudden, you know, people that never thought to buy stickers are buying stickers because we made it so easy.
You know, going back to the beginning a little, like, I imagine just like anybody starting some sort of production facility, the first order can't be good. You know, you're learning how to do it. You're learning what materials to buy and everything like that. Do you remember what that was like?
Yeah. Yeah. We had a lot of luck. The crazy thing is our first order was GitHub before we even launched the site. So GitHub's a pretty popular, you know, website. They got acquired by Microsoft or something. Yeah. They got bought by Microsoft, but, the guy that was developing our site knew the founder. And he said, hey, I'm developing a sticker site. And the founder liked stickers because they had the GitHub. Octocat was a popular sticker. And so he put me in touch with the founder at GitHub. And I said, we were so excited. I said, I'll do a free order, you know, first order free. He said, well, I usually buy 10,000 stickers. We were like, oh, crap. You know, that was a lot for us. Like, oh, crap. So we had to stick to our word. We made 10,000 stickers. We sent them to him. And he goes, these stickers are terrible. And so it took us like 3 or 4 times to get it right. You know, when you first get into printing, your colors aren't, we didn't know, like, your colors aren't necessarily correct. You know, we had a lot of issues with the quality in the beginning. So, but he helped us before we even launched get to a reasonable quality standard. And then we just kept, you know, we kept improving it.
So when you first started out, did you have like a roll-in printer that could cut, like, you know, like that's what we have in our shop and yeah, we despise it.
Yeah, we had something along those lines.
Yeah. It's funny when shops, like, I'll see this happening. Shops will buy equipment. They'll buy these Roland 54-inch printers. Like, I'm going to get into stickers. And then they realize that, like, the same sticker quality you order from a company like yours is just, like, completely different. And to get that same quality on your own, you know, $30,000 machine, you still have to laminate it, cut it. It's not easy. Like, printing stickers is not simple by any means. Like, I'd rather screen print than print stickers.
We invested a lot into the process to get it. You know, it's relatively inexpensive to get into stickers, right? Like, the machines aren't that expensive, but you had to get consistent quality and do it at scale. You know, we're dealing with, like, lots of orders. We need colors consistent. We have quite a few machines. It's difficult to synchronize your machines so that they all produce the same quality. So, like, whether somebody's getting a sticker off printer 2 or printer 6 or whatever, you know, it's coming out the same quality. So yeah, we had to put a lot of effort into that. But, you know, once you figure it out, you're good to go.
Can you tell us, like, can you give us any details on the secret sauce of how you guys proof so quickly? Like, you guys send proofs like it's like that.
Yeah.
And AI was not fast. AI just came out like last week.
Well,
so like
that's like, you know, people say AI, I say like it's machine learning. We've been using something similar to AI for quite a while, like pretty early. Actually, like one of the first, we built our proofing system as like to launch with. So that was like one of our first major innovations. We thought like there should be a simple online proofing process where it's not, you know, before the proofing was done through email, right? So, you know, we considered like, I don't know, making our proofing process available to other people at points in various points in time. But, you know, we designed the proofing system, which, you know, gave us a leg up, and then we just keep investing in it. So if you look at, you know, it's we got a whole team of developers that work nonstop on our proofing system. And we do have what I would call something similar to AI. You know, we do have some, like, people call it, I guess you could say it's AI. People are using the word AI more often. Before it was machine learning, but what people call it is just, it's just software doing things automatically. So our software is able to do quite a number of things automatically. And then our team does the rest, what software can't do. But yeah, mainly it's just investment in software. In fact, my founder is, my co-founder is, he's in his 80s. When he co-founded the company with me, he had never used a computer before. So when we started hiring developers. We started with a firm on the outside, and then we started hiring. We actually got two of the top people from the firm to leave and join us. You know, we built out our own
team. Wait, your co-founder's 80?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. My co-founder's 60.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Wait, yeah. can you talk about that for a sec? Like, I don't know. That's
how that happened. Yeah. Well, yeah. My co-founder's like he was in his 70s. He's a friend of mine. He likes, I don't know. It's a long story. He's a friend of my father's. He's my brother's godfather. So I mentioned my dad passed away when I was 8, and he sort of just always looked after me. So me and him always kept a good relationship. And he when I was screwing up in school, he would step in and tutor me and make sure I passed math class and stuff like that. So, you know, he always was there supporting me. When he finally turned 70, he got his first computer. He was asking me for advice on how to use it. And I just started BSing about starting an internet company and it'd be better to do manufacturing online and yada, 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 yada. And he said, what the heck, how does that even work? And I showed him Cafe Press and Zazzle, and he said, okay. And then he said, okay, I'm going home. He went home and he came and saw me the next day with a notepad. And he said, almost word for word, Anthony, I stayed up last night with a bottle of vodka and thought about what you said. And he goes, I finished the bottle and decided we got to start an internet company together. And so that was the beginning of Sticker Mule. I actually said, I got a lot going on right now. Because I was, I had another company I was managing. I said, I got a lot going on right now, maybe down the road. He said, no, you showed me the internet last night. And he goes, you're already 5 years too late. So he said, I didn't have any money. He said, well, I'll fund it if you're interested, you know. And I said, he said, but you got to decide today because you're already 5 years too late. So I said, all right. So he said, well, we got to get a lawyer and get incorporated. And, I didn't even tell my existing company that I was going to start a separate one because I didn't want to, we had gone through bankruptcy. I didn't want to put the fear of God in them that I had lost faith. I had lost faith. So I did this quietly on the side. We went and got a lawyer. Our lawyer was 80 at the time. And we went in and he said, Dick, me and Anthony need your help. We're going to start an internet company together. And Dick said, the internet, my grandkids say it's phenomenal. He didn't use a computer either. So
that is such a good story.
Yeah. So
wow.
We got incorporated and then we launched 3 months after that conversation. And I did basically two jobs for quite a while.
Dude, I'm gonna reach out to your team after because I want a shirt that says Sticker Mule and Internet Company.
What's your relationship now with your co-founder? Is it like pretty good or do you guys?
Yeah. I just talked to him. He didn't really, he kind of worked the first year and then he was really excited. So we had phone support in the beginning. He would take phone calls and do phone support. He didn't really know how to use his computer, but he would still try to do phone support. But, he's a good friend. I call him if I need advice on something or if I need help with something or other.
That's
I called
super
him when
cool.
when the banks all seemed like they were going to implode a few weeks ago. I called him and talked through what we should do, and we ended up now we had one bank, now we have three banks. So
that's such a cool story. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
What are Christian. Like when you guys are growing? Do you remember any wild just war stories of? I don't know, you having to drive somewhere to pick up an order and deliver, just wild stuff that's happened over the years.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot, one in particular that I don't know. I'm trying to think of something in particular that would stand out. The GitHub one, because it was the first order was memorable.
Yeah.
I have more stories more so about customers than about the creation of the company. Like people ask how big we are. I never really disclose that, but I can say like, we do have an operation where we operate both in the United States and in Italy. And, I like serendipity. I like good stories. So I think like whenever I get a chance to create a good story, I just try to do it. And so, one of the things I would do in our earlier years is I would just surf the internet. And if I saw somebody that seemed interesting, I would talk to them. And I was on a sticker website called Unix Stickers and the live chat popped up. And the guy said, hello. I said, hey, I'm Anthony from Sticker Mule. I said, oh, I love Sticker Mule. And he said, can I ask you a question? Why don't you sell to Europe? I said, well, why do you care? And he said, well, I'm Italian. And he said, I would love to buy from Sticker Mule, but I can't because you don't sell to Europe. And so I said, well, can you help me figure out how to do it? He said, sure. So he ended up writing a proposal of what we need to do, changes we need to make to the website to service Europe. We implemented those. We started selling to Europe. And then, as luck would have it, I randomly went to Italy to buy a machine. This is another crazy story, but I randomly went to Italy to buy a machine. We wanted to get into transfer stickers, which are vinyl lettering, people call them. And we heard there was like an automatic process to do it. So I called, and the company that did it, that came up with the process, was in Italy. So we called them and we said, we'd like to buy your machine. And they said, well, it's August. We're it's coming. It was like the end of July. It's going to be August soon. We're on vacation. We can meet in September. I said, you're going to be on vacation soon. When are you going to be on vacation? They said, well, next week. I said, what if I leave today? Would you be able to see me? So they said, sure. So I ended up getting on a plane. I went to Italy. We ended up buying this machine. And then I contacted the Italian guy that I met on live chat, and I said, I'm in Italy, would you like to hang out? And he said yes. We went and saw him, became friends, and he ended up joining us, and we founded Sticker Mule Europe. And at the same time, the engineers that designed this technology became friends with us and ended up exiting their company and starting our, we have an internal hardware division where we design our own machines now. So we use a combination of machines that we buy and machines that we make. And so, yeah, if you want a crazy, I don't know, that's one.
I mean, you talk to a live chat person, literally like a live chat help desk, and that turned into Sticker Mule Europe.
So
that's pretty wild.
So he started, because he ran a sticker operation and he had customer service for his own business. So we absorbed his company and they did customer service for us and marketing in Europe. And then the machine we bought, the engineers grew to like us, and they exited their company and they started innovation lab for machinery in Europe. And then we said, well, since we're making machines in Europe, we need to test the machines in a live setting. So we ended up building a factory in Europe as well. And the guy that I talked to on live chat oversees the entire operation.
Wow. Okay. Wait, so tell us like the scale. I'm trying to understand the scale of Sticker Mule's at. Because you guys are out there, but you sort of are under this mystique layer underneath. So, you know, whatever you can of size-wise or like the different warehouses.
Like how many employees you got?
Yeah.
So, you know, all these companies that talk about themselves, they're generally either, we don't do a lot, you know, we did this interview because you guys are customers and I like, you guys are also in printing. So I thought it'd be cool to talk to you guys, but a lot of people talk about their numbers. I think it's interesting. They're either, looking for venture capital or they have venture capital or whatever. And, you know, we haven't ever needed venture capital or gotten it. So we've always, you know, kept quiet. We haven't done any podcasts. Cause I said, like, honestly, you know, secrecy is a competitive advantage and it's not helpful. Like if you
makes look a lot smaller too, but clearly that's not the case.
Yeah. It's commoditized. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. It's, you know, as soon as people get a sense of success, like, right, obviously we're successful. People can guess that, but you know, maybe who knows, it's hard to tell exactly. But you know, all these people that go and say, oh, I did this. All of a sudden you got competition. And then, you know, you got this whole VC world in California, which has cooled off a little bit because of the economy, but they just start throwing money at your competitors. So, you know, we've had some competitors get VC funding. A number of our competitors have gotten acquired in the last few years. So I don't know if you're familiar with the sticker market, but I think three of our top competitors were acquired.
Wow. Do you try to then acquire like sticker companies if it's a good, or do you're just like, it's easier for me to just beat them out?
Yeah. So when you're acquiring, you know, it'd be tempting to do, but like when you're, if you were to acquire a sticker company, we're only acquiring like revenue. And we like innovation. I mean, we like innovation. I wasn't particularly interested in stickers. I wanted to create an internet company. You know, I was like, I wanted to create an internet company. Like me and my friends would be, you know, I think there was a point in time everyone was like, that was the cool thing to do. Like, let's get on the internet. Let's create an internet company. I like technology. I like innovation. Since I had a background in manufacturing, like manufacturing was my foray into being able to start a sort of technologically based company. But I like innovation. So yeah, we wouldn't go, acquiring a direct competitor, I don't think. You know, we've done a number of like little mini acquisitions of technology. Generally we do technology or something fun.
So the way we use Sticker Mule in our shop is we don't print stickers. We'll sell them to customers, but we sell them as upsells to shirts, right? So if someone puts in a big order, we'll be like, hey, you know, we'll throw stickers on, and then we just ship the stickers straight from you all. Do you get a lot of B2B sales? Like, is this weird? Like, do you get people reselling Sticker Mule, like wholesaling it?
We don't know.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So possibly.
I definitely think in our industry, shops will, instead of going ASI promo because it's so hard to order, they will order from Sticker Mule and then get them to their customers.
So I shouldn't pre-announce features, but like, I think since you guys are in this space, maybe it makes sense, but like,
no, we are like, we're for this too.
Yeah. We're working on a feature to support resellers. But in a different way, I think in a different way than anyone else has done. So we're not going to have like reseller accounts per se. Like we just released public profiles. So you can create a profile URL on Sticker Mule. Anyone can do it. We have a lot of artists that buy from us. And this is a feature that's going to benefit everyone, but might be particularly beneficial for resellers. But if you're able to get people to enter through your page and either buy through your page or sign up through your page, that person is going to get tracked as your affiliate, and will give you a percent of their future purchases. So all your people that you're currently managing, you could have them come directly to us. And then as they buy from us again in the future, you guys would make a percent. And so that's our way of,
it just enhances, like, we'll just tell our customers, yeah, we just get them from Sticker Mule and we'll send them. They're great. You know?
Cause
for us, intake wise, our B2B print shop isn't built for someone ordering 100 stickers. There's just not enough in there. Right.
We're all optimized for like very small orders.
Right.
We're, you know, we do those 50, we do deals all the time, 50 for 29, 50 stickers for $29. We do 10 stickers for $1. We're optimized for small orders. Like the only way to do that is you got to be able to design your own manufacturing processes. Otherwise, it's almost impossible.
Yeah. But I also think you guys think about this a lot differently, right? You said traction, or, you know, like getting traffic, converting customers, you know, reducing that spend. It's a different game that you're playing when you give a customer 10 stickers for $1. If you're a small business, you don't start doing those promos if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, you can't do 10 stickers for $1 out the gate, right? You have to know that that's going to work for you.
Yeah, that's a CAC. That's a customer acquisition play, right?
Yes, that one is purely like, let's acquire a customer because we know they're going to come back. And on average, they're going to come back and return more than we lose on that order. You know, obviously, we're losing orders. We're losing money at $10.
What about the hot sauce? Our shop has way too much of it. Tell us about the story behind that. So if you order stickers, you get hot sauce, right? Tell us about that.
We like to be fun. We like jokes and humor. And so, you know, the hot sauce was just an opportunity to inject a little more comedy and humor into what we were doing. We did a job fair, and to get people to come to the job fair, we gave away free hamburgers. So we said to our city, we're going to do free hamburgers for the whole city. Come by and get one. And we made 10,000 free hamburgers. And then we wanted the hamburger to showcase our commitment to quality. So we got fresh ground beef, and we also made our own sauce. And after that, it wasn't the sauce that we sell, but after that, you know, our VP of sales joked, he's like, we should make hot sauce and sell it. Somebody was like, we should sell the sauce we put in the hamburger. And our VP of sales said, no, we should make hot sauce. And I said, I wouldn't be opposed to doing that. And he goes, I'm not being serious. I said, no, I think it's a good idea. I think we should make hot sauce. I said, it'd be funny. And I said, but it's only funny if it's actually a good hot sauce. So I said, you know, we put together a team, and they spent almost a year researching hot sauces before we came up with what is now Mule Sauce. And it just won first place in a blind taste test against 400 other hot sauces. So it actually is a really good hot sauce, which, you know, makes it all the more entertaining. And it's a good marketing for us too, because, like, right, it's funny and it makes you memorable. Not every company sells hot sauce. So it, you know, we want to be memorable. We want to be top of mind, and hot sauce is a funny way to be top of mind, right? It's like, one, you don't forget a sticker company that sells you hot sauce. Two, if you actually like the hot sauce, we are part of your daily routine.
Yeah, it's interesting how you're using something every day in a commoditized industry, right? Like, there's so many sticker companies out there. There's, like, you know, whatever, but you're like, there's an association there, which is awesome. And it's well played, right? It is funny. Like,
Yes.
You can't not do it. You probably spent a lot of time marketing the way in which you roll that out and the humor behind it. And, you know, it's not, don't try this at home, folks.
Yeah.
So it seems like you guys looking for me at your job board, you hire all over. You mentioned there's a team in Europe. I don't know if your facility's in Amsterdam, New York.
That's where I live, my hometown. That's my hometown.
So 18,000 people, smaller town. Is that right?
You thought you had 18,000 employees or something.
I was like, where'd you get that number?
But I was just like, so hiring, everybody always talks about as being hard, but I gotta imagine you have a bigger facility here. You just said something about a barbecue for the city, and everything. What are the kinds of things you're doing to hire and staff and all that stuff?
Eventually you realize you got to do marketing. When we were at a certain point, we couldn't get people. And the reason was nobody knew us in our hometown. So we don't really sell to our hometown. There's only 18,000 people there. There's only a few businesses. There's not a lot of revenue there. So Sticker Mill was growing in our hometown, but we were marketing to the world, not to Amsterdam, New York. So a lot of people in our hometown didn't even know us. And, our supervisors are saying, we can't get people. It's getting harder and harder to get people. I said, I think what maybe some new companies don't realize. I mean, companies eventually realize this, like successful companies. But you have to market to get talent, just like you have to market to get customers. And so, we just put aside a marketing budget to get the word out in our hometown. And our strategy there is mostly events, fun events. For the community, there's not enough fun in our community because it is a small, kind of depressed town. It used to be a lot bigger. It used to be like 40 or 50,000 people. So it's, it's on a downturn. So like a lot of the enthusiasm had left. And so, we do events.
We get people to come to events. Actually. So, I mean, there's literally a budget set to hiring. And they go spend and advertise the company to that prospect, not to potential customers.
Yeah, and primarily through events. And then, and then we do as much as we can to support the community.
In the States, is that the only facility you ship out of?
Because of the pandemic, we opened a small facility in South Carolina because we got shut down. We got shut down. So it was funny. We got shut down. It was very frustrating, you can imagine, right? And so we were, I complained for about a day. I don't like to complain. Because like, people just complain and they do nothing. So I was like, I'm not going to just complain and do nothing. So I said, we're going to try to open up another facility. So we were shut down for a month. I complained for a day. And then luckily I had a friend of mine that was running distribution centers for Dollar General in South Carolina. And I called him. I said, how hard would it be to open a facility in South Carolina? He said, I could look into that for you. So he ended up, finding a facility for us. And then he ended up leaving Dollar General and running our facility in South Carolina. And he set the whole thing up. So you were like, how are you going to do that? I was like, I don't know, figure it out. But he did the whole thing for us. And that's a much smaller facility, but it was part of, we had on our mind, in our backlog of things to do that you need redundancy. You need a disaster recovery plan, right? So for as many things as possible, we have backups, but we didn't have a backup for the manufacturing because we didn't think there could be an event that would, I guess you do think there could be an event because there could be some, some natural disaster or something that could shut you down, but we didn't really think it was a major priority to have redundant manufacturing. But the pandemic happened and we decided let's have some redundancy in the manufacturing.
Do you run the business off of a track? Have you read the book Traction? Obviously you're running a bigger business. Do you try to run it off some or like a sort of methodology to
I didn't get that from anywhere in particular. I couldn't tell you where that came from. I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I didn't get that from me. I don't know. I this is my framework, actually. It's my own personal framework. I said, in business, you just do two things. You find problems and you fix them. So I've kind of got that from my co-founder. Just like, what are our biggest problems and fix them? And if you look at business in general, the bigger the problem is that you solve, generally, the bigger the return. So, right, we solved the problem of how to buy stickers easily, right? That was like one of the original problems. That's the original problem Sticker Mill solved. But then inside Sticker Mill is all these little micro problems that we need to solve in order to make our business run. So, I'm just constantly finding problems and fixing them. But if you look at it, our problem's relatively small in the scheme of things, right? Like Elon Musk is trying to bring internet connectivity to the world via Starlink, right? It's a much bigger problem, and the return is much bigger. You know, he's the Tesla with the electric cars, right? He made, I don't know how much, he's worth $270 billion. So, business is generally about solving problems. And the harder the problem you solve, the bigger the return is. So within Sticker Mill, the bigger, the more challenging an issue, the bigger the return is. I used to tell our team in the beginning, because you guys know you're in manufacturing, I said, well, certain things just can't be done because there's constraints in manufacturing. There's only certain machines are available, right? Said, well, there's no machine that can do this. I said, well,
that's when you're like, we're going to build our own.
Yeah, exactly. Because I said to the other guy, I was like, when was it that we put a man on the moon? Like in the 60s? How the heck did we do that? Like somebody figured out how to do that. We can't figure out how to invent a new machine. Like, really? I mean, it's a doable thing. It just doesn't seem like so easy.
I think what I'm hearing, Anthony, like your leadership style is there's no such thing as like an objection, just obstacles. Right?
Like, yeah, and you have to weigh the difficulty of doing things. So I'm not going to like take on, I look at the challenge and I look at like, I'll do an analysis. Like if it's something I can do relatively quickly, I'll do it. If the return's massive and it takes a little bit more time, I'll do it. If it seems like it's going to be a huge undertaking, you know, with questionable return, probably I'll stay away from it.
Yeah. I hear like this Italy story. I hear opening a place in South Carolina. I hear like, we're going to build a machine. Are you pretty, do you take your time to make decisions? Are you pretty like knee jerk impulsive with it? Like I'm a pretty impulsive in my decision making. How are you when it comes to like, comes to that as a business owner?
I'm fairly impulsive. Okay. You know, I would say quick. I don't know if quick. I do tell people we operate off of principles. Some of them are published on our blog. And one of the principles I said is like, you have to be aware of bias, right? So you do have ideator's bias and you have a recency bias. So ideas that are fresh in your mind seem better than they should be. So I will like pause sometimes, or, you know, maybe my pause is I talk to other people, right? I try to move quickly, but I will call other people. I don't act independently. I'm always calling people. If like, say, let's start in South Carolina. I'm not just, let's go do that. And that's my idea. And I tell people to go do it. I call the rest of the team. What do you think? Should we do something in South Carolina? I call my friend in South Carolina. What do you think? Would this be hard to do? So I wouldn't say, maybe impulsive is the wrong word. I like to move very quickly, but I try to temper my decisions by getting feedback from other people and like letting a second set of eyes. And if I get enough buy-in from other people, then I'll do stuff. But I take advice from everybody. Like I'm actually, I grew up in manufacturing. I'm friends with I can't bring friends with everybody in the factory on the factory floor, but I'm friends with a lot of people on the factory floor. And I run my ideas by as many people as I have time to. And if people seem to agree, then we move forward.
That's super cool.
Just you personally outside of work, when I Googled your name, it came up that you won a boxing match.
Yeah.
In Mexico? Training?
I'm a box. I'm supposed to box June 10th, but they don't have the opponent finalized yet. So I'm waiting on that. But,
I couldn't find a video because I wanted to see it.
I'm 4-0, four knockouts. I'm 4-0, four knockouts. I don't know. People want to know why I do this. It kind of adds some balance to my life. Like I got a little, maybe I wouldn't say depressed, but you know, I don't love just working. I don't like just, and you know, I don't really, I'm financially comfortable. I've been comfortable for quite a while. So since like year four of Sticker Mill, I've been financially comfortable. So, you know, just working and figuring out how to make more money, like, it's not so exciting. I do like innovation, but in terms of hobbies, I tried a few different hobbies and I like boxing. When I was younger, I did it a little. And my friend who coached me was a retired heavyweight pro boxer. He actually fought out of the same gym as Mike Tyson in the Catskills. And he always wanted me to be a boxer. He wanted me to be a pro boxer, but I didn't do it. And so I got a chance to box again. I was in Mexico and I started boxing just for fun. I got a chance to box again. And I sort of did it just to support my friend, because my friend, who's a retired pro, big, giant, tough guy, was running around. He actually works for me. He runs the warehouse at Sticker Mill. And he was running around telling everyone that I can box. He's like, Anthony could have boxed. And people thought he was nuts. They're like, you know, I felt bad for him. He's always saying I could box. And he continued saying I could have, but I just didn't do it. And he's like, Anthony could fight. You should don't discount him. people thought he was nuts. So when I said, you know what, like this guy's running around forever saying I can box. People say I can box. Let me try and do it. So, yeah, I had a first fight in Mexico. I did two amateur fights, won both by knockout. And before my fight, like my coach and my friend and my coach in America and my Mexican coach, they both said that, you know, they're like, you're going to knock guys out very easily. I said, why? You know, I had been to gym sparring and stuff. I said, actually 2 days before my fight, I said, he goes, you're going to knock the guy out. I said, coach, I never knocked a guy out. Why would I do it? He goes, cause when it's a real fight, it's different. It's going to be a little more serious and you're going to take it more seriously. And he also said, you're a really nice guy, which is true. Like when I spar, I think it is, at least I don't like to hurt people in sparring. So I tend to be more defensive in sparring, but he's like, when you feel the pressure, you're going to turn it off a little bit. So I won my first fight by knockout in like the first round. And, then I won my second fight by knockout with a punch to the body. I shouldn't say this, but I don't know, whatever. Then I fought pro and got a knockout, and I just fought pro again 2-3 months ago, got my second knockout. So I don't know. My plan, I'm 40, so like my tentative plan.
You don't look 40. Wow.
Yeah, I was going to guess 30s or early 30s, but.
Tentatively considering, you know, taking boxing seriously for the next 6 to 12 months, seeing how far I can get with it, and then retiring because it's driving everyone crazy that I do this because it's a big distraction. But
it's like, where's Anthony? He's just like training in your office with a bag.
I mean, it's like it's the next challenge for you. You said something there earlier where you're like, I've you know, the manufacturing, I've gotten that high, and sales marketing, I've gotten like, I'm going to just go try something else. And you see people doing this, right? Like,
yeah,
he's Zuck's doing jujitsu. And
I should go fight Mark Zuckerberg, but I'm like,
internet company.
You know what? I give him credit. I did jujitsu for a little bit, and jujitsu is a great sport, you know? It's a much better self-defense sport than boxing.
So what's next for you? You've obviously you've been successful, you know, like your story is incredible. And I hope shops listening to this, like if you see an uptick in orders from print shops, it's because they just probably hear this and are probably inspired by it. But like, what's next for you? Where do you see yourself, you know, 10 years from now?
Yeah. So about a year ago now, we launched our own social network. So I didn't even get into talking about that.
Stimulus.com?
You know, we launched our own social network called Stimulus. That's a huge undertaking. We built it from scratch. If you look at all the some of the other ones that sprung up to compete with Twitter. So we decided to start building Stimulus. We started building Stimulus before Twitter got acquired by Elon Musk. We didn't even know that was going to happen. We were very frustrated, I think, similar to the way he was with the way Twitter was conducting itself. Not so much from the censorship perspective. More so from that, we saw that Twitter was designed in a way to encourage bad behavior. So, you know, you're playing a game, Twitter's a game, you're playing a game and you want to win the game. And if the rules of the game say that in order to like get attention, like that's the way you win, is to get attention. That's the goal. The way you get attention is to be provocative and to be nasty. The players are going to do what it takes to win. It's like, you know, boxing, right? You have to knock the guy out to win. Right. So I don't like hurting people, but if that's the rule, I'm going to do it. Well, the rules of Twitter was you almost had to be mean spirited to be successful on Twitter. That's the way it was architected. That's what the algorithm wanted. That's what they pushed you towards via trending topics. So we saw all that. And I think the whole world was very frustrated about Twitter from a censorship perspective. I was very frustrated about Twitter from this perspective. I thought they were casting humanity in a negative light and pushing people to become, you know, worse versions of themselves. And I said, you know, we have to show that social networks don't need to be so negative, that you could build one that's more positive. So again, Stimulus is a social network. It's a game like any other. The game is to get attention. But we removed all the incentives to be nasty and replaced them with new incentives that allow for more positive behavior, namely integrated giveaways. So people are looking for a lever to get attention. People use giveaways and other social networks to get attention. But we integrate the giveaways right into the platform to make it easy. So if you want to get attention on Stimulus, you don't need to come on and say you hate someone or say some provocative statement about politics or whatever. You can just run a giveaway and you're going to get a ton of attention by running the giveaway. So, that's my main, you know, aside from the boxing, you know, that's probably my main focus right now is continuing to grow that. I don't know where we'll end up in the social media space in the scheme of things, but I think, hopefully we can at least influence social media in a more positive direction by showing people that there can be different design decisions built into the platforms. And if you come on our platform and see, it's all positive interaction. Like one of our other innovations, which Twitter is sort of copying, and I think other networks are eventually all going to copy, is we verify everyone. So you can't interact on a network without verification, but we do ID verification. We need it to ensure the giveaways are fair, right? Because without verification, you could be on the platform 20 times and enter a giveaway. You could enter a giveaway 100 times and you're biasing the result in your favor. So we did integrated verification to secure the giveaways and make sure they're fair. But we also did it as an incentive to encourage more positive behavior. So if you're operating on stimulus, you have to get verified to interact. You're not obligated to use your real name. If you use your real name, you get a green check mark. If you don't use your real name, you get a alias badge that indicates to the world that you're not using your real name, which is, we think, is your right to do. But we think to the extent people operate using their own ID, they just naturally behave better. Like another huge issue with Twitter was the, anonymity, right? You don't know who these people are. And in real life, through the majority of human history, when you interacted with another human, you exposed your identity because they could at least see your face. So if you went into a bar or a store and caused a scene, right, people are going to have some sense of who you are, which is an incentive not to behave badly. So in real life, people tend to behave better than people behave on Twitter because people were behaving anonymously on Twitter. And then Twitter created a rule structure that basically told people to act like jerks. And so, of course, just like boxing is a rule structure that requires hitting other people, Twitter had a rule structure that required insulting other people. And so, so that's what they did. But yeah, we think both the changed incentive structure and mandatory verification are positive innovations for social media that like create a more pleasant environment online. And I'm actually kind of happy Twitter's already doing that. I think Elon Musk realized like a verified platform. He's doing financial verification, not ID verification, but I do think it's on the roadmap for Twitter to do ID verification as well. And they also removed some of the incentive structure from Twitter that was encouraging to bad behavior. So the algorithm isn't so kind to negative statements as it was previously.
Super interesting. I'm signing up.
Yeah, this is our other thing. Yep. And yeah, you're going to see some fun integrations between Sticker Mule and Stimulus in the near future. Like, again, it's not good to pre-announce stuff, but, we're doing financial giveaways. Those are the easiest ones to get started with, but we want to move towards product giveaways because we think product giveaways are great ROI for brands. Like giving away your product or giving away like a gift card or giving away a gift card, you get massive attention via the giveaway. And if you're giving away your product, that's a lot more financially affordable for a brand than giving away money or buying advertising.
I'm gonna ask you one last one. I think like more work related, but what do you feel like is your larger challenge running Sticker Mule today? Everybody has something, whether they're just getting started their business, they're at 5 million revenue, they're at 100 million revenue, somebody's dealing with something. What do you think like that biggest focus for you that you're working towards is now?
Continuing to grow traffic. Continuing to grow traffic. I realized recently, we have great profitability. But profitability isn't like no one knows what your profitability is, especially if you don't say it, right? Nobody knows what your profitability is, but people don't really care about that. If you really want to become a major player on the internet, you need eyeballs, you need attention. So we've gotten into situations negotiating with vendors, right? Where, some vendors like really respect us and take us very seriously and try to have great relations with us. Every now and then we run into a vendor that doesn't take us so seriously. One, you need traffic to keep growing sales, but you need those eyeballs if you want to be taken seriously and be in a situation where you can effectively negotiate with almost anyone. We've had issues at times negotiating with people that I wish we didn't have issues. But generally, you're talking about, I will say one because, they deserve it. But, Stripe was really bad to us for a little while.
Just like in getting totally fees down or?
Stripe totally they worked with us on stimulus and then they totally took it away. They shut down payment processing for almost 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And I just realized like it's unfortunate, but they take people seriously. They have a lot of attention because they get concerned, right? If you have a lot of eyeballs and you're very well known. I mean, we're fairly well known, but you know, you're taking more seriously. And I don't like to be in a situation where I'm getting bullied by, no, I don't know what the heck happened there. We had to have our lawyers take over the whole situation, and they ended up, they ended up turning the account back on. I don't know if I should have said that, but I feel like they deserve some amount of people knowing that they can be abusive at times, even towards a company like Sticker. I said, you know, I've been with them since day one, no problems. And, the situation was, we turned on, you know, so we didn't know when we started running giveaways on stimulus. We didn't expect this was going to happen because everyone was ID verified, right? So we thought that solves everything, ID verification. But despite that, people came on the platform and started running fraudulent giveaways in order to launder money. Or so basically, like, you would have malicious actors would like steal a credit card and then come on and run a giveaway to try to launder. Right. Yeah, and then they would hope that the giveaway would go to their friend. Right. Now, this happened, but it happened to the tune of a few thousand dollars, and they got upset and shut us down, and they kept saying, well, we'll turn it on maybe next week, maybe next week, maybe next week, maybe next week, maybe next week. I said, look, it's like $3,000 or $4,000. You know, I just told you our ad budget's, you know, in a million. So I'm like, our revenue with you guys is pretty substantial. You're going to shut our entire business down over $3,000 in fraud. People should know that these companies do stuff like this. And unfortunately, it's sort of a monopoly situation where there's only a few players that can do what these people do. So it's not so easy to leave them. And yeah, so our number one, you know, my number one priority is, you know, traffic. Traffic's what we need to continue growing the business. But yeah, I think traffic is what we need. I don't like being in situations where, unfortunately, Stripe is a much more well-known brand than us. And I think they think that, I don't know, I felt like it wasn't a nice way to treat us. Anyways, I get in trouble for saying things I'm not supposed to.
All good. No, this is awesome. We got to do this again. I think this will be a cool episode. Shops listening to this are going to be super.
We didn't get much into the screen printing side because Steven, you're like, oh, have you tried their ordering process on the screen printing side?
I got to order shirts from y'all now to see what's up. That's exciting. But
well, thank you guys. This is fun.
Yeah. If you're ever in Chicago or in LA,
this is cool. We're in both areas, but yeah, definitely appreciate the time. I know you don't do too many episodes and stuff. You guys are pretty low key, but we appreciate what you guys have done for the space and being able to really set the bar high. So
thank you both. This was fun.
Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.